The views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
So we say, we always say to Black Panther Party that they can do anything they want to do. We might not be back, I might be in jail, I might be anywhere. But when I leave, you can remember I said, with the last words on my lips, that I am a revolutionary.
Revolution comes with a price tag. You a slave to a flag in a country that clearly doesn't love you when they probably never have. Told you turn the other cheek and they met it with a bat. Fucking protesting them sit-ins. Told you go fight in the war. Vietnam, you died, good riddance. The man of the house rule took you from your siblings. Turned around and pump crack right up in your city. And they turned all your leaders to martyrs. You was off in the war, now who was guarding your daughters? It was riots in the streets, killed Malcolm and Martin. Called the National Guard up because we ride with our guard up. And now it's blood in your guard. The Second Amendment don't apply to you. Everything that they taught you was a lie to you. See, they scared of your skin and they dying to shoot. Take the American dream and then you die to pursue.
One day it'll all make sense. If it ain't about power, then it don't make sense. But none of that money matters when you live in madness. The one that you figure out that all you got is this. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger.
Good afternoon. You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed, broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. Today's date is March the 29th, 2016. It is a Tuesday afternoon as I broadcast from the state of North Carolina to our global audience. Welcome everyone in. Got a few things to talk about. Will not be on air any more than an hour today, but I do have some important information. I like to think the information I share is important, but there are some things that are going on, particularly dealing with politics, that we should be paying attention to, and I fear that a lot of people are not paying attention because a lot of people, the majority of people, not just a lot, and this is a statistical fact, but the majority of the people in the United States do not engage politics in any form or fashion. They don't even watch political news or anything like that. I'm talking about the vast majority of people. And whether or not you vote or not, you need to be paying attention to what these people are talking about doing to you. Because regardless if you cast a vote or not, if they pass some kind of policy or some kind of law, it's going to apply to you. Because guess what? You live within their borders and you are subject to their jurisdiction. And yeah, I mean, so you affected by it whether you participate or not. That's just an undeniable truth that people have to realize. And I'm not saying that to tell everybody, start voting. If you don't vote, that's your right. All right, that is your right. But you do need to be paying attention as a part of just being aware of what's going on around you and behind these enemy lines. And so that, you know, something happens and then you're totally unprepared, totally unexpecting it. Now, it has been in the news here lately. Let me just briefly go through the things I want to talk about today. It has been in the news about Ted Cruz, who is trailing Donald Trump for the Republican nomination for president. Everybody has been focused on Trump, and rightly so. But Ted Cruz, don't sleep on Ted Cruz as being a racist hater himself. Okay, and now he has been pushing this legislation proposal to treat Muslim Americans just like German Jews and other marginalized groups in Germany in the 1930s and 40s. I mean, the same sort of fascist rhetoric is the norm among Republicans. But what is kind of surprised me today, I shouldn't use the word surprise, but interesting, it was interesting to me, is the fact that two different polls over the past couple of days suggest that more than half, 51%, of American citizens polled support this asinine proposal. Okay. And when we say Muslims here in America, automatically, for whatever reason, probably because of propaganda and whatnot, a lot of people just want to focus on the Arab Muslims and whatnot. But there's a lot of black Muslims here in the United States. I don't know if you missed the video that we shared on our Facebook page, Black Talk Radio Network, but we shared a video of that group that has been in Texas and going to these mosques and what have you, and staging what they're calling armed, you know, demonstrations, armed protests. They got masks on. They're carrying AR-15s and other rifles and firearms and whatnot. And, you know, it really all it is an intimidation operation. That's all they're trying to do is intimidate people. But in South Dallas, you had the New Black Panther Party, the Huey Newton Gun Club, as well as the Nation of Islam that came together, and they had a counter demonstration. It was primarily the Newton, the Huey P. Newton Gun Club, and the New Black Panther Party that was actually doing the armed demonstration. And they were in solidarity of counter protesting against the group, the anti-Islamic group, anti-Muslim group, anti-non-white people groups that have been staging these sort of armed intimidation rallies at different mosques around the countries. But it didn't go down like that in Dallas. So, and this was a black, this was a Nation of Islam mosque that they plan to do this at. So black people are included when we are talking about Muslims. Whether we're talking about Muslims here in America or abroad, a lot of Muslims are non-white, and you know that's really all that matters when you're talking about the social political construct that people refer to as racism, or excuse me, as white supremacy. So that's all that matter. So I want to take a look at that and share information with you on that. Also, long-time human rights activist and prison abolitionist, prison slavery abolitionist as well, Angela Davis, says that she supports the political platform of Senator Bernie Sanders. Angela Davis came to prominence as a young 20-something-year-old activist in the 1960s, part of the Black Panther Party, which originated in the state of California, and I think she joined while she was in college in California. I forgot where she was going to college at the time. And she came out, an article came out yesterday where she was talking about she supports the political platform of Senator Bernie Sanders. Now, this also throws back to the conversation we had with the caller yesterday from Mexico. He said he was calling in from Mexico to blackmail. And, you know, I mentioned that the Black Panther Party was a political entity. I want to get more into that, but we know politics wasn't the only thing that they were engaged in. They were engaged in just about every area of people activity that you can name. And that's what I was talking about, a multi-pronged approach, all right? A multifaceted approach, all right, in any kind of movement for freedom, all right? Because that's really what we're talking about is freedom, freedom from slavery. All right, so I want to talk about that a little bit. Also, this is very important. We have prison slaves, and I kind of debated about whether or not I should be calling them slaves and what have you. I know that, you know, slave is a dehumanizing term. It makes it seem like the people aren't even human or whatnot. But, you know, the preferred term is the enslaved, you know, enslaved prisoners or what have you. But the masses really don't understand the nuances sometimes of the different terms we come up with in the language. And it's always best to speak in terms that people can easily understand, and people easily understand what it is to be a slave. They know what it is. Well, not everybody, because some people want to lie and talk about, you know, the enslaved Africans were immigrants, or, you know, immigration workers who came here to work and got a job and what have you, you know. So I shouldn't say everybody, but anyway, in Texas, the prisoners are threatening a work stoppage strike on April the 4th, which is just what, less than a week away, days away. April the 4th will be next Monday, and they are threatening to do this work stoppage strike if their demands are not met. So we want to take a look at that. They even stated that they were inspired by a growing wave of prison strikes in Alabama. Shout out to the Free Alabama Movement, enslaved prisoners and what have you, part of that movement to abolish prison slavery. Also in Georgia and California. So there has been a growing there has been a lot of activity in that area. Of course, it's not coming across on your mainstream television because they want to hide slavery from you. They don't want you to know it exists. They want you to believe that, hey, you know, everything's fine. Nothing to worry about, you know, with these prisons and what have you. So they hide. It's not so much of what, you know, the mainstream media does say, even though, you know, that is a huge problem with the propaganda, but it's also what they don't tell you. It's the things they don't share with you. And I have yet to see, since I've been involved in the abolitionist movement since the past 5 years, I've yet to see any of these work stoppages, strikes by these prisoners to make mainstream news. It just simply does not make the nightly news or your corporate news or what have you. They just act like these things are not happening. And, you know, we rely on the internet and able to pick up these stories that are usually published in alternative corporate news sources. And or either locally by the local news stations and what have you. So definitely want to share that story with you. And yesterday I came across, it might have been a day before yesterday, but I came across this article, and we shared it on our Facebook page, Racism Report. And you have more and more racists who are getting involved in a White Lives Matter platform, according to the SPLC. So I want to definitely take a look at that. It just reminds me of a program I did. It probably was last year sometime when I first heard the term White Lives Matter. And I said, white lives don't matter to white people, because if it mattered to white people, then they would be in the streets just like black and other non-white people protesting against police terrorism. Since by the numbers, white men are getting gunned down by police more than any other demographic in this country. A lot of people say, and there's nothing wrong with pointing out the disproportionality of non-white people, primarily black people, getting gunned down by cops, you know, disproportionate to their population numbers, just like, you know, disproportionate population numbers in prison and what have you. And so, but still, they are killing a whole lot of white people. Matter of fact, I was briefly just, you know, taking a break, sat down, watched some TV. And, you know, my daughter was already in there watching Entertainment Tonight or something like that. And they ran a segment on police, you know, killing family pets and whatnot. And you know, a bunch of white people getting their pets killed and murdered by police and what have you. So I definitely want to take a look at that. But, you know, in short, white lives don't matter to white people. They don't care. You know, and when I know I'm speaking in generalized terms and what have you, but the vast majority of white people do not care about white lives. And there are a number of things I could point to prove that to you. Let's not forget that for the first time in the history of USA Inc., their birth rates are lower than their death rates. So that means more white people are dying than are being born. And, you know, that's for the first time since they started keeping these sort of statistics and whatnot that has been reported. And so I talk about, you know, some of those things that are causing all these white people to die. But you know what? These White Lives Matter people ain't even focused on that. All they trying to do is be antagonists towards black people. That's all they trying to do. They don't really even care about their own damn lives. All right, so that's what's on tap for today. If you would like to make a comment, ask a question, what have you, share some news, give us a call at 641-715-3660. Again, that's 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032 pound. That's 549-032 pound. Once you dialed in, hit *6 and 1. That'll signal me. Then I'll know, you know, to open up your mic. You can also do the same with the web-based flash phone. You can call from anywhere in the world. Obviously, you got an internet connection if you're listening to this program. So you call in from anywhere in the world, and it'll be a free call. You won't be charged. Okay. The other way, and the last way, let me go ahead and make sure I have the studio line open and what have you. Let's see. That number is 704-951-5030. That's 704-951-5030. Again, I don't plan to stay on air no more than an hour, as we're at the end of the month and need to get an early jump on these reports so I can start getting them out within the first 5 days of the month. And that, what I'm talking about is the statistical data for the radio station Black Talk Radio, all our web properties including Black Talk Radio Network, and our social media properties such as Black Talk Radio Network on Facebook, Political Prisoner Radio, New Abolitionist Radio, and quite a few others that we maintain. I think last month through our social media operations, we were able to reach over 300,000 people with various information, news stories, and what have you. So our donors do get access to all of those reports. So I have to, you know, get a little bit better, you know, get a lot better about getting those out in a timely fashion. Okay, so let's go ahead and jump into this first story. Salon.com published this story. Y'all may have heard. Let's see if I can find an audio clip in case y'all have not heard that. Let me go to YouTube and see if I can find a clip on Ted Cruz talking about making Muslim communities more of a police state than they already are. I mean, they act like they ain't already surveilling these people and act like they ain't already patrolling their communities. They're acting like, you know, they're leaving people alone and whatnot. No, that ain't the case. So, I mean, Ted Cruz is just so asinine. Let's see, Ted Cruz and Muslims, we'll put that Muslim ban. No, that's not it. Let's see. Now, he did disagree with what's his name, Donald Trump, on banning Muslims totally from coming here. But he does want to erect a Nazi-like police state, or we don't even have to point to the Nazis, really. We can point to the treatment of the black community. So, again, this is asinine because they already doing it. Let me see. Ted Cruz police patrols of Muslims. Let's see if that will bring up anything. Ted Cruz, all right, here we go. Let's go ahead and take a listen. Hold up. Let me see. Might have one of Ted Cruz himself. All right, let's go ahead and take a listen.
After the attacks in Brussels, a number of U.S. politicians went to the media to share their thoughts on the horrible terrorist attack. However, Ted Cruz took things a little far when he talked about the importance of using our local police departments to monitor Muslim neighborhoods where acts of radical Islamic terrorism could take place. In fact, he was so aggressive in stating that he did get a little blowback not only from Democrats or liberals, he got some blowback from the NYPD. In fact, he specifically mentioned the NYPD and how they were doing a controversial program in New York City where they would follow around perfectly innocent Muslims and monitor them to make sure that they weren't getting involved in anything questionable.
Let me stop it right there and just add a bit of information. They weren't just doing it in New York City. And I was shocked to find that the NYPD was actually doing this in several states. So that means they were paying police agents, informants, officers, whatever. They were paying them to surveil Muslims in several different states. So let's go ahead and continue.
Well, he has now gone on CNN to kind of talk about that a little more. Let's take a look at video number 9.
Being afraid to confront what it is we're facing, being afraid to name it, that it is radical Islamic terrorism, has left us vulnerable to jihad, to acts of terror. Now, that does not mean targeting Muslims. It means targeting radical Islamic terrorism. And it is the heart of law enforcement and national security to prevent those who are waging war on you from actually carrying out their attempted acts of war.
So the way that he frames that is really interesting, right? Because our not only our local police departments, but we have the FBI and the CIA. We have federal agents that are specifically looking for radical Islamic terrorism in the country. It's not like, oh, there's radical Islamic terrorist behavior happening in these neighborhoods, and we're just kind of turning a blind eye to it. No, we have laws in place. We have actions in place to seek those people out. What he initially said is we should monitor these Muslim neighborhoods, which makes it clear that you consider all of these Muslims who haven't done anything wrong potential threats.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that targeting based on religion hasn't worked out well historically. But and the people who usually do that do come from the right wing, and they are scary folks. And so the whole idea that we're going to blame a group of people is not new. Donald Trump has done it. Ted Cruz has done it. And they have these ridiculous ideas that if you just say radical Islam, the problem will be solved. Well, you already said it 1,000 times, dude. Why isn't it solved yet? Right? And
all right, we're going to stop it there. You notice who he did not mention in terms of right-wing fascist governments targeting people based on their religion. And he did not mention Nazi Germany. Now, let's make no mistake. Nazi America existed way before the Nazi Party was ever born. In fact, once the Nazi Party was created in Germany and rose to power, they actually sent members of their party over here to study the U.S. government, not only the U.S. government, but the various state governments' policies in regards to black people. Sterilization programs, eugenics, and all of that kind. They came over here and studied how the governments were treating black people and other marginalized people. And I mean, they went back and they implemented their master plan. And they targeted, not only people based on their religion, but also based on their political affiliations and whatnot. They targeted communists. They targeted people based on their ethnic group, like the gypsies. They also targeted Afro-Germans. You had black people, again, black people all over the world, people. All right. Afro-Germans. They also targeted, people who had, mental deficiencies and what have you, disabilities, and even mental and physical disabilities, they targeted people for elimination. But in the context of religion, they targeted Jews. Again, Jews are not white people, as I stated yesterday. Jews are not non-white people. They are, in fact, white people. The Jews of Europe are, in fact, white people, and he targeted them not because of their skin color, but because of their religion. Okay, and I don't care if Hitler himself even wrote, not that you can believe anything he is, because he said, because he was a propaganda master, but if he viewed them as non-white people, he was incorrect. He was just simply incorrect, and I wouldn't put too much stock in what he said on that. Okay, but now they're talking about you got Ted Cruz promoting the same fascist Nazi policies here in America. And see, again, this is why it is important to pay attention to politics, even if you don't plan on voting. All right, because I'm pretty sure that back in the day in Germany, you know, as the Nazis was rising to power, that was politics, and people were not paying attention. And then the next thing you know, these other laws get passed. Now you can't own guns. You know, you got to wear a yellow star David on your clothes. Now you can't leave your ghetto and what have you. And we're going to increase our police presence in your neighborhoods, and you won't be able to move freely without being stopped and frisked like black people here in this country in many different areas, and other non-white people. So, you know, this is troubling. Now, the most troubling aspect of this is the fact that half of people who took part in two different polls say that they support what Cruz is proposing. All right, that's possibly your neighbors and what have you. If you live in an area like I live in that's predominantly white, you know, that's probably a whole bunch of these people around here. All right, and they wouldn't hesitate to try to do it. Again, it's very important to pay attention and gathering intelligence on your enemies. All right, you may not view them as an enemy, but they certainly view you as an enemy. Now, let me read from this Salon.com article that was published by Sophia Tesfaye. She says, two new polls released this week show that upwards of half of all Americans agree with Republican presidential candidate Ted Cruz's response to last week's terror attack in Belgium with a plan for police to patrol Muslim neighborhoods in America. A new morning consult poll notes that 49% of American voters asked in the days after the Brussels terror attack said they agreed with Cruz's call to empower law enforcement to patrol and secure Muslim neighborhoods before they become radicalized. Now, here's something important to note about that passage. They didn't just ask anybody this question or whether or not they agreed with Cruz's political proposal. They ask people who vote, okay? People participating in politics who put these people and provide support for these people, give them funding and money to push these sort of political policies and what have you. So they didn't just ask Joe Blow on the street, okay? They just didn't ask somebody who does not participate in the process. The morning consult poll talked to American voters who said that, yeah, we're totally down with oppressing Muslims in this country even more than we are right now. So, again, you think that this is just a problem for areas of Detroit where you have high Arab populations? Think again, because you have a lot of black Muslims in this country and a lot of black Muslims worldwide. Now, this is so another thing that makes this asinine is police brutality, police occupation, all of that type. Because that's what he's talking about. He's talking about an occupation, ramping up the occupation, because they already spying on them. They spying on us all. They already doing these things and what have you. Okay, so but what he's talking about, boots on the ground in these neighborhoods. That's what he's talking about. An increased police presence or occupation, and definitely these people going to be empowered to extrajudicially murder you. It's going to be legal. It's going to be legal, even though it's supposed to be illegal. Hell, it might as well be legal when 96% of the cases that go to the Department of Justice end up without any charges or whatnot. So, in effect, it is legal for them to extrajudicially murder us in the street and what have you. So, but that's what makes you radicalized. All right. Police occupation is the and terrorism is the reason why so many young black people and black people of all ages and other non-white people, as well as, you know, white people who have aligned themselves against police terrorism in this country, are out in the streets and have been for a number of years. These protests and demonstrations in the streets, the blocking of traffic, the shutting down of businesses and what have you, did not just start last year. This has been ongoing resistance, primarily led by our young people, at the various young black men have been gunned down in these streets by cops or white vigilantes. So that's the kind of stuff that will radicalize you. These people do not deal with logic. They're not thinking logically. All they're acting on is their biases and prejudices, their racism towards non-white people and non-Christians. That's religious bigotry there. So again, you got over half of American voters participating in two different polls. I'll read the other poll here in just a bit, but who support this kind of garbage, that support this kind of fascism. So again, I say to you, you live behind enemy lines and you need to start acting like it. Again, I'm a voter, I'm a proponent of voting, but that ain't the only thing I do. I don't think that my vote is going to protect me from any of these racist, poor, working class white people that live where I live. Okay? My grandfather and my uncles already showed me how to protect. The vote not going to protect us. No, but the gun will. And we got plenty. And they don't mess with us because they know that we will shoot back. So there's a number of things that people should be doing because of the increased bigotry and racism that is going on in this country. It's bubbling right under the surface. Anything could happen at any time. A war really could break out. You already got people talking about taking guns to the GOP convention, over 50,000 people. Talking about Cleveland is a dangerous city. So what they talking about, Cleveland is predominantly black. That's what they talking, and they want to be armed so they could shoot a black person and then yell, "I fear for my life," and what have you. So that let me see. Here's another poll that came out this week that confirms that more Americans are in line with the Texas Tea Party senator's direction of handling potential terror threats within U.S. borders. Let me see. Did they name the other poll? The other poll was on the Huffington Post. Yes. 45% of all respondents. This isn't necessarily voters, but, you know, I would imagine that only people who are interested in participating in politics are taking these sort of polls, because other people, they don't, you know, they don't care. They're not aware of what's going on and whatnot. They don't participate. So I doubt if they'll be taking a poll. But in this poll, it, you know, I'm assuming that it's probably primarily voters. Could be just a bunch of racist haters too as well. But 45% of all respondents in a new Huffington Post YouGov poll agreed with Cruz's statement on patrolling Muslim neighborhoods. The approval of Cruz's surveillance proposal skyrocketed to 74% among Republican voters. Both polls found that a majority of Americans support Republican presidential frontrunner Donald Trump's call for a temporary ban on Muslims entering the United States. 51% in both the Morning Consult and the HuffPost YouGov poll said they support banning Muslims entering the United States. All right, so this is the political atmosphere that is right there in your face. And again, I'm not, if you don't participate in politics, I'm not trying to convince you. All right, but I view politics as the front line of the war right now. Right now, we are in a shooting war, except for we getting shot. And it's not so many of them getting shot. We the ones just getting gunned down. But there is a shooting war. But it's not a two-way street. But I view politics as the front lines of the battlefield right now. This is where all the activity is. This is where you see all the passion among millions of people as they intimate, you know, their policy positions and what they support and what have you. And so, you know, I feel like Malcolm X said, by any means necessary, we must oppose these people on every war front. Every war front. We should be preparing in a number of different areas, whether that is preparing for a breakdown of society and a shooting war breaking out, or the grid going down so that we can feed ourselves and sustain ourselves and until, you know, things get back to relatively, you know, normal in terms of being able to purchase food and other items that we need. You should be preparing for all of that. You should be preparing. Okay. Economics, all everything. You should be preparing. All right. So that's that story. You know, I can't say that I'm surprised, man. I am really not surprised. I imagine some of these people are victims of the fear mongering, because I know it wasn't all white people who probably voted in this poll. I've heard black people talk like that too. All right. So, you know, a lot of this may be fear based propaganda brought on by fear of you know, terrorism and what have you, when you don't even know who the real terrorists are. You don't know, you know, you don't know who's paying these people. You don't know who's funding these people that they show you on TV. You really don't. It's no way. You don't know if it's a false flag. You don't know if it's a genuine attack because somebody's angry that their whole entire family got blown up at a wedding in Yemen or something like that, you know, and so they want revenge. We don't. It's no way to know, people. That's just the honest to God truth. That's my opinion. That's my truth. There's no definitive way to determine, absent any concrete evidence, of who's behind these attacks. But I do, you know, I do feel like, you know, people need to start looking at the fact that you just can't go around the world blowing people up, bombing their countries, overthrowing their countries, and then like, oh, they just gonna take it laying down. You know, everybody is not nonviolent. Everyone is not passive. You're using violence against them, they'll use it against you, and then there's just this cycle of violence. All right. And guess who's getting rich? The military industrial complex, selling everybody guns and what have you, and whatnot. So yeah. All right, so then I'm gonna take a station identification break, kick some message music, and then when I come back, I wanna talk about Angela Davis coming out saying that she supports Bernie Sanders' political platform. I will point out that his platform does involve abolitionism. The abolitionist bill is the Justice Is Not For Sale Act, which would ban private prisons and jails in the United States within 2 years. Within 2 years, you know, got to give them time to either let these people go, which is what we want, or, you know, putting them in state prisons or federal prisons, which is not what we want. We do not want people who have been convicted over legislated laws that criminalize people behavior that has been going on for thousands of years. Again, I don't view something as a crime unless you do something to harm me or another individual directly. You know, if a grown person wants to drink alcohol, we ain't locking them up for going out and buying alcohol and drinking it, you know. And no. So why should we be locking up people for using any kind of substance? You know, we can sit up there and disagree with them taking the substances all we want to, but I'm going to oppose you when you're talking about taking their freedom for doing something simply because you don't agree with it. They are not harming you. They not harming you. If you really want to do something about it, then provide help for them, okay? And putting them in slavery is not helping them. All right, so going to take a break and then come back. We'll talk about that on the other side. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News, part of the Black Talk Radio Network, a platform that was built by black people for black people and is listener supported. Please consider consider making a donation of any amount today. We also have subscriptions for donors where you can contribute regularly on a monthly basis. We'll be back on the other side.
I scratched up.
Also recognize that individuals do not create rebellions, conditions do. Until they begin to address themselves to those conditions, rebellions will continue and they will escalate. They will escalate. Sometimes the question has been raised about why black men fight and have fought for this country. It is the black man's implacable will to be free that makes him fight for this country. And it is that same will that will make him fight this country, fight this country, fight. I want to address myself now to problems as they exist in the black community across America. And America cannot be considered as a stable and just society. But no stable and just society can mount a successful offensive against black youth who break a window and at the same time plead that it is powerless to protect black youth who are being murdered because they seek to make American democracy a reality, reality, reality. Each time a black church is bombed or burnt, that is violence in our streets. Each time a black body is found in the swamps of Mississippi and Alabama, that is violence in our land. Each time black right workers cannot be protected by the government, that is anarchy. Each time a police officer shoots and kills a black teenager, that is urban crime. You see, we recognize America for what it is, the Fourth Reich. And we tell America to be on notice, because if you are gonna play Nazi, black folks ain't gonna play Jews. Ain't gonna play Jews.
Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium. And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Scotty Reed in for this broadcast from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. And, you know, yesterday we were talking about political prisoners for a little bit. And, you know, President Obama want to criticize Cuba about some political prisoners. And then you had, what's his name, Fidel Castro, who penned an open letter criticizing Obama. You know, and the question, you know, has been asked by many of people, what about the political prisoners here in the United States? Well, you just got through listening to one. H-Rap Brown, now known as, who changed his name to Jamil Alameen, is a prisoner. Okay, he is a political prisoner, framed as they always do. COINTELPRO ain't over. They still use them same tactics. Just cause J. Edgar Hoover died, and I hope he's burning in hell, does not mean that they stop with their COINTELPRO activities that they use to target black and leftist organizations that were fighting for freedom. Basically, that's what it all boils down to, like he was just talking about. Freedom. We want freedom. So he is one of those political prisoners framed up in the state of Georgia for killing a deputy, even though the APP they put out of the shooter did not match him whatsoever. Jamil Alameen is 6 feet 5 inches tall. The person they talking about gave a description of was 5'9", somewhere around there, you know. But, you know, he's a Muslim now. He's a former Black Panther Party, former SNCC, and they had to, you know, lock him up. And then they were afraid down there in Georgia, since he's a Muslim, oh, he going to be radicalizing them other Muslims. And even though he ain't been convicted on no federal crimes, they got him in a federal supermax prison. And it took a tremendous effort on the behalf of political prisoner advocates to even save his life, because he developed an abscess in his tooth, and they were going to let him die. Wasn't giving him any kind of treatment whatsoever, and that poison was just building up in his system. He almost died, if not for political prisoner advocates constantly emailing, constantly calling people, and what have you. So there's one political prisoner right there, Mr. Obama, and we want him freed along with the rest of them, as they say in the political prisoner advocacy movement. Free them all. Now, longtime human rights activist almost became a political prisoner herself due to her work with the Black Panther Party in the 1960s, and she's now a college professor. Angela Davis says that she supports the political platform of Bernie Sanders. And let me go ahead and pull that up. This comes to you from TeleSirTV.net. A radical Black educator, Angela Davis, was once called a terrorist and a danger to the nation by former President Richard Nixon. Angela Davis, a radical public intellectual and former Black Panther, has praised Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders' campaign for raising issues that never would have been taken up within the context of the campaign between the two major parties. The political activist and former leader of the Communist Party, USA, was asked about Sanders during a tour of her latest book, Freedom is a Constant Struggle, Ferguson, Palestine, and the Foundations of a Movement. She said, "My approach has always been to emphasize independent, more radical politics," Davis said, but admitted that Sanders is the U.S. presidential candidate she most aligns with. When asked which of Sanders' policies she supports, Davis said it is absolutely essential to raise the issues of decommodification of education and free education. And, of course, he's calling for tuition-free education at our public universities, she said. California back in the 60s was one of those states. She might have even took advantage of it. Free public, tuition-free public college. So it's not like that they didn't have this in the past. They got rid of it when non-white people started taking advantage of it. All right. So she went on to say, on the topic of health care, Davis praised Sanders' promise of free single-payer health care. Then there are the larger questions about the prison industrial complex that have not been sufficiently raised, she said. Let's see. Davis, who was born in Alabama in 1944, has campaigned and written about civil and women's rights, racism, healthcare, and prison reform, as well as poverty and grassroots resistance, since she first came into the public eye in the 1960s. Let me see. That's pretty much all I want to share from there. Y'all can read the rest. I have linked to it. So, again, you know, it ain't a matter of supporting a person for president or whatnot. It's about pushing policies, pending revolution. Now, Angela Davis, as well as the Black Panther Party, which was a political party, many of them ran for political office and what have you. They gave political education classes among the other programs that they had, like the sickle cell testing, the free breakfast, the food pantry, the clothing drives, and I mean, just a whole 30 plus or more what they call survival programs for Black people. But politics was a part of that. Okay, it was. Now, again, did they just focus on politics? No, they didn't. They focused on armed self-defense and community self-reliance. There's nothing saying that we can't walk and chew bubblegum at the same time. And we are more than capable. And it is because of their political activities and their educating the Black people on politics is to and getting them to form coalitions, political coalitions, so they could take over the local political system. That is why J. Edgar Hoover targeted them. That's why they started getting assassinated. That is why they started getting framed up. It's because they were engaging in activities that they don't want you to engage in. Hell, they'd be perfectly fine if a black person didn't ever vote, or a non-white person for that matter. That's why they pass all these other laws and whatnot. They don't want you involved in the process whatsoever. Okay? And so we learn from our elders. You know, we learn from what worked and what did not work. And, you know, they were stated yesterday that what they did didn't work. No, it's because what they were doing was working. It's the reason that the United States ran a terrorist program to eliminate them, using local police departments and whatnot. Look at the assassination of Fred Hampton. Look at the attempted assassination of Assata Shakur and everybody that was in the car with her. And one of her comrades was assassinated and whatnot. Now, who do we got? We got a politician, the governor of New Jersey, demanding for Assata Shakur to be returned from Cuba. And the Cubans have said it ain't going to happen. It's not even on the table. So don't even ask, because you're not getting her back. So, again, Bernie Sanders supports legislation like the 2015 Justice is Not for Sale Act, which is in Congress right now. All right. And I do not believe that any other person, if they became CEO of USA Inc., would sign that bill into law if it gets passed, you know. And it can get passed if enough people put the right people in office that would support that. That's the ultimate so-called prison reform, is to abolish private prisons. That right there is it right there. Man, I cannot stress how important it is that we get rid of these private prisons, because that's where all the money is coming from. To go in the pockets of politicians to do what? To pass legislation to increase mass enslavement. Again, I'm not trying to convince you to vote, but you better be paying attention to what these politicians are doing and not doing. Because whether or not you participate, you will be impacted. They're already taking your money and making you pay for their empire. And I don't even see many people being able to do anything about that. So you're still paying for your own oppression. And the only way that you're going to end that short of an armed revolution is through politics. That's the only way. Sure, we as individuals, we can move to areas where they don't have much of a police presence, like the area that I live in, where we're not being stopped and frisked and pulled over all the time. And I mean, I ain't even seen a cop at all in a month of March. Sure, we can move to areas like this. We can go deep into the woods and hide from them and whatnot. But who wants to live like that, on the run, hiding all the time? Who wants to live like that? So again, absent revolution, because I certainly believe we need to dissolve the corporation known as USA Inc. and start over with a new republic that's really based on freedom and justice for all. But until then, we have to do whatever we can do to bring relief to people who are suffering. I estimate at least 750,000 people who are prison slaves who don't even belong in prison. If I can just help free, you know, half of them, you know, I feel like, you know, my efforts was well worth doing and what have you. Because I just really don't believe that I would, if I went knocking on people's doors and said, you know what, let's start training. You know, let's have some military exercises and we're going to train to run up in this prison and we're going to set our people free, man. And if we have to take some lives, we're going to take some lives because, you know, give me liberty or give me death, as they say, you know, and we want our people free from slavery. You know, how many takers do you think I'm going to get? How many? Let's just say not enough. Ain't nobody ready to sacrifice their life or their freedom to free another soul. Most of it just focused on, you know, trying to survive behind these enemy lines. And we ain't trying to press the enemy on no front. I said many of us, not all of us. Now, moving on to the last story that I would like to share, with the last couple of stories that I would like to share with you. This is a very important story. We have shared it on Black Talk Radio News. Black Talk Radio Network's Facebook page, as well as New Abolitionist Radio Facebook page. But you have prisoners in Texas who are threatening the work stoppage. Now, New Abolitionist Radio, which I help co-host and co-produce on Wednesday nights at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time right here on Black Talk Radio Network, we have been reporting on some work stoppages that happen at some of those private prison detention facilities for immigrants. And they had, yes, they put them to work. They just not sitting around. No, they are making them people work, you know, because, you know, when they can have workers that will work for free, that they can force to work for free, why the hell should they hire you when they got a slave population to draw from? I mean, people really need to wake up. And we want to talk about a lack of jobs and everybody talking about, rightly so, the free trade agreements and how it has hurt the you know, the American workers and taking jobs from us. Well, you know, I ain't really heard nobody outside of the abolitionist circles talk about how prison slavery is taking jobs from Americans. So anyway, let me go ahead and share this article with you. It was published today on iwoc.noblogs.org. This is the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee. Published on their website. Texas prisoners organized. They threatened to strike April the 4th with IWW Prisoner Union. Prisoners affiliated with the Industrial Workers of the World Union have announced plans to enact major work stoppages in Texas on Monday, April the 4th, if their demands are not met. Inspired by a growing wave of prison strikes and, you know, on New Abolitionist Radio, we call them slave rebellions. Inspired by a growing wave of prison strikes in Alabama, Georgia, and California to end prison slavery and vastly reduce the prison population, Texas prisoners say it's their turn. So we're not talking about the immigration detention facilities. We're talking about if we want to call them American citizens or whatnot, who have been snatched up into modern day slavery. That's who we're talking about, even though, you know, we do view the immigration detainees as also being enslaved. But Texas prisoners say it's their turn to take a stand. These prisoners are part of the IWW's Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee, the first widespread effort for union recognition among prisoners in decades, with over 750 members in prisons across the country. This story is nothing new, said Nicholas Onwuki, former prisoner and co-chair of the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee. Texas is running a slave plantation. They work with companies to take advantage of slave wages. Let me stop right there. Again, I try to use language and encourage people to use language that's accurate. $7 an hour, $8 an hour, we hear people referring to that as slave wages. That is not slave wages. All right. It's not a livable wage, but it's not slave wages. All right. The term slave wages actually comes from the historical fact that some enslaved Africans in this country were paid. These were like your highly skilled people, like artisans and like the ones that built the White House and blacksmiths and what have you. One of the abolitionists in profile we did was a black woman who was enslaved, who was a very talented dressmaker, and her owner, her enslaver, used to share some of the profits with her, and she saved up her money and she bought her freedom. That's slave wages. Pennies on a dollar. That's slave wages. That's what's being paid to many of these prisoners in on these prison plantations, if they're being paid at all. So some of them are not paid at all. But pennies on the dollar to do phone customer service calls for AT&T, customer service calls for State Farm. Yeah, Jake from State Farm is not sitting in a State Farm office in a cubicle. He's on a prison plantation taking your calls. All right. So let me continue with the article. Texas is running a slave plantation. They work with companies to take advantage of slave wages and keep expenses as low as possible by forcing people into inhumane conditions. But prisons can't run without inmate labor. Change is coming because prisoners are growing a mass movement in prisons, one that won't stop until prison slavery is abolished. The prisoners in Texas have issued demands for their strike and a call for support. They demand better living and working conditions within the Texas penal system, an end to extortion in the form of large copays for medical treatment, meaningful good work time to require reentry at the earliest release date, unless there are objective reasons against it, an independent committee to review inmate grievances, and an end to human rights abuses. All right, please check out that article. Please spread the word, the information. If you live in Texas, please, please, if you can show up, stand outside the prison in solidarity with the striking enslaved persons on these prison plantations, please do so. Please do so. And I don't understand why regular unions aren't a bigger part of this. This hurts union jobs when you're using prison slave labor. All right? So, and again, let me just make this very clear. Everybody that's in prison don't belong in prison. Don't come at me with no talking point talking about where they shouldn't have did what they did to get in prison. Well, how do you know they did what they were accused of doing and was convicted of doing? I shouldn't even call it a flaw. The criminal justice system is designed to do exactly what it's doing, and that is to make slaves, because they did not abolish slavery. With the 13th Amendment, they made it legal as punishment for quote-unquote crime. Doesn't matter if you were wrongfully convicted or not. You are, once they do convict you, you are a slave. And even if you rob someone, let's say, you know, you rob someone at gunpoint at an ATM machine or whatnot, I do believe, absent any other avenues that I'm aware of or I'm knowledgeable about, but if you rob someone, you belong in prison, man. You need to go to prison. You need to go to prison for robbing someone. And I empathize with you if you robbed them because you living in poverty or whatnot, you know. But if you harm another individual, you got to pay for that, man, you know. And I don't think that you should be sentenced to slavery either. I think that prison should be a place where people are transformed and they get to help, whether that's whatever kind of help they need, so that they can be reintegrated back into society and become, you know, quote unquote, model citizens, if there is such a thing, but to where they are not harming other people. But the vast majority of people that are in prison are in there over nonviolent legislated crime, meaning that it wasn't a crime until a politician proposed a law and a bunch of other politicians co-signed onto that law, and then the CEO of USA Inc. signed it into law. Wasn't a crime before. I'm talking about, if you want to call it prostitution or whatnot. If you're being coerced into prostitution, then that person who coerced you into prostitution has committed a crime against an individual. They need to go to prison. All right. They need to go to prison. But if you are like a whole bunch of people where you make a conscious decision, you've done everything that you could do, you couldn't find no help, but you still need to eat, you still need to keep a roof over your head, so you decide to go on, let's say, pay six or whatever, however they do it, and, you know, you start charging people to have sex with you. That ain't harming me. They ain't got nothing to do with me. That's between you and Bennett, and Scotty ain't in it. And Scotty certainly doesn't think that he should be paying for police officers to be, you know, interfering in a transaction between two consenting adults. I don't want to pay for these people to be in prison. I don't, you know, I don't want to pay for police officers to be spending time on this nonviolent activity. I want them to spend their time tracking down rapists and real criminals. All right. I don't think anybody should be in prison for selling weed. I don't care how much they were selling. When we're looking at all of these primarily white people in these states that have legalized recreational and medicinal cannabis, where they got so much money, they don't know what to do with it. But yet, we got all these other people that's in prison for that very thing. No, they should not be there. That's slavery. They ain't harmed you. They ain't forcing nobody to use cannabis or nothing. So, standing in solidarity with the prisoners in Texas. And remember, the last I heard was the strike that's going on in Holman Prison. They actually had a violent rebellion after a prison guard started beating on this prisoner, and it was uncalled for. I think the warden even got stabbed. He tried to run up in there and, you know, oh, we gonna get this prisoner. And the other prisoners just got tired of it, man. They tired of being they're tired of being slaves. They're tired of their human rights being violated and treated worse than animals are in many cases. So, standing in solidarity with you brothers and sisters. I don't know if it'll be going on at any of the women's prisons, but, you know, wherever they're happening, I stand in solidarity with the enslaved. Now, last story that I want to share with you as I get ready to wrap up the program, going a little over an hour. Just a reminder, Tando Radio Show will be live today at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time right here on Black Talk Radio, your digital black radio station. Let's see. The White Lives Matter movement. The Southern Poverty Law Center published an article about maybe 10 days ago. I didn't really check it out until today. But there apparently is a White Lives Matter movement. Let me just go ahead and read this to you. It was written by, I think it's somebody by the name of Sarah Vietz. It was published on March 18th. She writes, after the accelerated growth of the Black Lives Matter movement, many racists across America have gone on a barnstorming campaign posting the catchphrase, White Lives Matter, to counter a message they believe is playing a part in a systematic devaluing of white culture, even orchestrating what they call a white genocide. Since then, the Texas-based, here we go in Texas again, the Texas-based neo-Nazi group Aryan Renaissance Society, a member of the white nationalist coalition United Aryan Front, has attempted to capitalize on this momentum, momentum by promoting WLM as a movement dedicated to the promotion of the white race, according to ARS documents. While it's unclear if WLM is a group attempting to create this alleged movement, claiming to have representatives in various states, or a pet project of ARS, members of ARS encourages sympathetic whites who want to spread the White Lives Matter message to contact ARS members. Now, I'm not going to read the rest of it. It's pretty long. Please, you can check it out. I mean, I'll read the rest of it for my own information, but I'm not going to read the whole article on air for you. Please check out the rest of it. I'm going to keep my commentary short, but as I said last year, I did a radio program. White lives don't matter to these white people. And I know that and we should have an open and honest conversation about that. But I know Black Lives Matter is focused primarily on black and sometimes brown people who are getting gunned down in areas that are heavily policed by, you know, the Gestapo in this country, the modern day slave catchers and what have you. And I know they've been focused on that. But the fact is that they killing everybody. They killing Asians, they killing Hispanics, they killing black men and women and children, they killing everybody, and they are killing no one more than they're killing white men. If you look at any of the databases that keep the statistics and have the racial categories, like the counted, if you look at last year's totals, over 1,000, white men are the number one victims of police terrorism in this country, getting shot and killed by police. Now, you know, granted, I'm not saying everyone who has been shot was an extrajudicial murder. We do got some people out there that are criminals and they don't want to go to prison and they will shoot at the police and they end up getting killed. I'm not no fool or anything like of the sort to where I'm at like every last single one of these, you know, 1,300 people was an innocent victim. But a whole lot of them are too large of a percentage. And then we don't even know how many people really being killed in this country by cops, because all police departments are not required to report, which should be a requirement if they're getting federal grant money. But it's not a requirement. It's just a suggestion. We suggest that you turn these statistical or submit this statistical data. But from what we know from media reports, the vast majority of the people that's getting gunned down in their homes, in their backyards, in the streets, on the job, are white men. So, but I don't see no masses of white people with their own predominantly white movement out there standing in front of a local police department with a sign that say White Lives Matter. Now, I do see white people participating in the Black Lives Matter movement and focusing on black lives and non-white lives and whatnot. But the vast majority of these racist haters like this, the poor working class racist white person who there is nothing supreme about, obviously they don't care about their own freaking lives. They just want to be antagonistic towards black people because, you know, they want black people's lives to matter even less than it already seems to matter. And whatnot. Now, at the beginning of the program, I talked about the fact that for the first time since they started keeping mortality statistics, that white birth rates are below white death rates. I wonder if getting killed by all these cops got anything to do with it. But also, we see the heroin epidemic that is hitting so many of these white communities, and not just heroin, but meth as well. Where's all of that kind of stuff coming from, man? That heroin coming from? You know, it's coming from Afghanistan. I mean, there are credible videos. You got members of the military giving interviews to people on, I think Geraldo Rivera did an interview over there in Afghanistan, of Marines who were guarding those poppy fields. So as white America finds itself in the grips of a heroin epidemic, I don't see any of them pointing the fingers at the Obama administration, at the Department of Defense, at the CIA, at the Drug Enforcement Agency, about why in the hell is all of this dope being brought into the country, into these white communities, you know, being guarded by the United States military. I don't see them talking about that. Now, they are being, the U.S. government is being very much more sympathetic to all these white, at least they say they are sympathetic and whatnot. And I think President Obama about to provide about $1 billion to help heroin addicts who OD and whatnot. But, you know, no such help for black people when the crack epidemic hit. But, you know, I'm not even going to go there. But also, What else is killing all these white people? Militarism is killing all these white people. All of these wars and whatnot. Because my observation when I was in the military, even though I was not in an infantry unit, I was attached to an aviation unit before I got went to another union where I was just totally in a communication battalion and whatnot. But when I was stationed in Hawaii, you had, that's, you know, 25th Infantry. So I was in a unit that was attached to the 25th Infantry, but we weren't infantry. But the vast majority of infantry, I would suspect by eyeballing it in my experiences and talking to other people and looking at, you know, the people who are being killed and made, the vast majority of them is white, man. So y'all want to kill Muslims so badly that, you know, you willing to sign up and go to wherever they sending you and, you know, kill all these non-white people and whatnot. And you getting killed in the process. All of this stuff adds up. All of this stuff adds up. But, you know, these sort of people, they just don't get it. They just don't get it. This is being inflicted upon you by the very government that you claim to support and the very police that you, you know, think is for you. When in fact, they're gunning you down more than anyone. So white lives don't matter to you. You just saying that because you want to be racist towards black people, because if white lives matter to you, you would be opposed to all the things that I just talked about. You would be opposed to all of these endless wars and what have you. You would be opposed to all of that. You'd be opposed to police terrorism. You would be opposed to slavery, you know, because there are white people that are enslaved on these prison plantations behind nonviolent, victimless, legislated so-called crime bills and what have you. So, you know, anybody's killing you or destroying your culture or committing genocide against you, that's the U.S. government and the police department. It ain't got nothing to do with black people. So that's all I got to say about that. Before we go off air, let's take this call. Caller, you're going to have the last word before we get ready to wrap it up. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Peace, Brother Scotty, and peace to the listeners. I just wanted to speak to the categorization that Neely Fleur Jr. promotes that you mentioned toward the beginning around white people, non-white people, and white supremacists. As someone that uses the term non-white at times, I have heard of people who seem to believe that the negation of white in that term, or the kind of oppositional nature of that term, is somehow perhaps demeaning to black people or other non-white people, identifying them in opposition to someone else instead of a more positive identification. So I just wanted to know what your thoughts were on that, and if there were any other terms perhaps that could speak to non-white people without it having that kind of relative quality.
Yeah, is this tag?
Yes, peace, Brother Scott. This
hey,
is tag.
Hey, peace. Good to talk to you again. This is the Black Talk Media Project's intern in New York. I appreciate the question, Tag. I agree with Neely Fuller. I also think we need to keep it simple. You know, keep it simple so that the masses can understand what we're talking about. I can understand where they're coming from when they say it kind of, you know, seems like it's a slight against black people or whatnot. But no, in the context, like Neely Fuller says, the context of white supremacy, he has three classifications. You have a white supremacist, all right? You have non-white people, victims of white supremacy, and then you have white people. And his, according to his definition, that simply states that this is a melanin deficient person. Does not mean that they are racist or they practice racism and therefore put in the category of white supremacists and what have you. So I don't have a problem with his definitions in the context of what he is talking about and trying to understand the system for people who are very, very confused. It just simplifies it, you know. Now, again, I always, when I say non-white people, I also try to put the emphasis that I'm talking primarily about black people. Okay, I make that distinction. I'm talking about non-white people, but primarily black people are the biggest victims of slavery here in the United States. And so I'm trying to see all sides of it, but I really don't have an issue with his classifications because I think they're accurate. Does that answer your question, Tag?
No doubt it does, and I appreciate that. And the fact that you mentioned about keeping things simple with respect to mass communication is definitely noted. So appreciate that. Mm-hmm.
Now, that you bring that up, I come up with my own definitions because I live around a bunch of poor and working class white people. And let me tell you, I don't find anything supreme about them. So I think it would be inaccurate for me to call them white supremacists when their standard of living is significantly lower than mine. They're living in roach-infested little tiny trailers, and they don't even own their land. I'm living in a house on land that has been owned by our family for hundreds of years. So I don't see anything superior about their position. Okay, so I came up with my own definitions of a white supremacist. I view a white supremacist as a person who is a wealthy white person, either in business or some other activity, and they practice racism against non-white people, politicians who have political power and whatnot, and they advance policies that are harmful to black and non-white people. They have power. Okay, now, the other classification I have is racist. That is your poor, working class, unemployed, whatever you want to call them, white people who are racist, who hate me because of my skin color and nothing else, and what have you. Or maybe they hate it because they see black people doing better than they are, but they don't really have any power over me. So and so I don't think that they are in a superior position, so I just simply call them racist. They're just racist. That's all they are. They are not in a superior position. They don't wield any power over me, so I'll just call them racist. And then, of course, you know, we got the non-white people, and that's black people and everybody else, you know, that has melanin and are targets of the racist system. And of course, I left out white people, which are simply just melanin deficient people who are descendants of people called Europeans, regardless of their nationality or religious affiliation. So I kind of, you know, and Mr. Fuller does encourage us to come up with our own terms and whatnot. So those are some new definitions I came up for myself. All right, Tag, did you have anything to close us out with as we get ready to wrap up this program?
Sure. I mean, just as usual, very much appreciated the broadcast and, you know, this tactic of divide and conquer that speaks to a lot of what you discussed today and what gets discussed around these issues, including how different races are designated, et cetera, is still very much alive and is constantly being used against us, you know, as you well know.
Right, right. All right, Tag. Well, thank you for calling in and with your questions and your thoughts on these issues. Thank you. And you have a great day, sir.
You as well. And to the listeners as well. Peace.
Peace. All right, folks, I'm going to get ready to wrap up this broadcast of Black Talk Radio News. I will not be on air on Wednesdays, as I'm regularly not, but I am on air tomorrow night as a co-host of New Abolitionist Radio, 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time every Wednesday night here on Black Talk Radio. We talk about 21st century slavery and human trafficking, like, you know, we talked about in sharing those stories about the prisoners who are going on work stoppages in Texas and what have you. So if you really want to learn about slavery as it exists today, and learn that slavery was never abolished, if you read the 13th Amendment and you can comprehend English, you will clearly see that it leaves slavery in place as punishment for crime. And that's what we all, that's all we focus on, is those type of stories and related information on New Abolitionist Radio. So please join me, Max, and Johanna, and again tomorrow night, 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, Black Talk Radio, New Abolitionist Radio. Peace and blessings to all. Check this out before I go. Oh, recognize the fact that we do, in fact, live behind enemy lines. It's a battlefield out there. And on a battlefield, you know, they teach what's called having battlefield awareness. Even when you're driving, if you ever heard of defensive driving and whatnot, all that means is being aware of your surroundings. 360 degrees, stuff is going on around you, and you need to be paying attention to as much as possible so that you hopefully can prevent yourself from becoming a casualty on that battlefield. Now, again, there's no guaranteed foolproof method to prevent you from becoming a victim that I'm aware of. If you're aware of one, of something, please let me know. But, you know, you can codify yourself. You can develop your situational battlefield awareness and decrease the likelihood that you will become a casualty. All right. But we ain't trying to run. We ain't trying to hide. We actually do want to be fighting this system and ending this racist, terrible system that is plaguing all of us on this planet. All right. Until Thursday. For Black Talk, another episode of Black Talk Radio News. Peace and blessings to all. Y'all be safe out there.
They just hope that he'll never wake up because they never want to meet him on the battlefield.